Okay, so that's how milk gets to puppies. Let's talk about what milk is made of. So the components of milk are very similar to the components that we talk about in the Feeding the Active Dog course. They are macronutrients. The number one macronutrient in milk, so these are the big molecules, the things that they need a lot of. What's the number one? Water. Water, water, water. And so you want to be thinking about how to get water into your bitch because that's what she needs to make milk. Then, pretty high level of protein. I'm going to show you a comparison between species just so you can get an idea of what high protein is. But pretty high protein levels, high fat levels, and then a really interesting mix of types of fat. And so these are our long chain, PUFAs are our long chain fatty acids. And in dogs, dogs have a very high level of DHA or omega-3, the omega-3 fatty acid that I talk about an awful lot, probably so much that you're bored with hearing it. But it is very high in dog milk. And interestingly enough, it's very low in almost every milk replacer. Even Myra's would be the only thing I fault Myra's on. And so we want to always be keeping in mind that we're trying to get DHA into our dogs, especially if we're doing milk replacements. And I don't have a great solution for that. And then the fat is also based not just on the kind of fat, but also the size of the fat globules. So it's not just molecules because fat tends to sort of clump together. And the smaller the globules, the more digestible the fat. And then carbohydrates. Dogs actually have a pretty high level of carbs in their milk, higher than you would expect for a carnivore. But if we remember that dogs are able to process carbohydrates, then it kind of makes sense. These are particularly sugars. And the most important sugar in milk is lactose. So you'll hear me say that dogs are lactose intolerant, but what they are is bovine lactose, cow lactose intolerant. They aren't dog lactose, so it's a different molecule. And then there are lots and lots of micronutrients. There's a bunch of minerals together. These are called ASH, even though they're not. They're really important minerals. Obviously, calcium is key for growing puppies. I'll give you a little factoid about calcium in a second. Phosphorus, in most dog milk, the calcium phosphorus ratio is less than 0.1 to 1. So, like 0.85, 0.89 to 1. Dog milk is very high in iron. And it has plenty of vitamins, obviously, and it has antibodies. Colostrum has all three kinds of antibodies: IgG, immunoglobulin G, immunoglobulin M, and immunoglobulin A, and they all do different things. And then regular milk has IgG. And IgG helps protect the lining of the intestines. So the bad bugs can't get through. So here's our species comparison. We have energy, which is basically calories. You know, the measure is kilocalories per liter, but we're just going to call it calories. And then a protein percentage, a fat percentage, water, and then lactose, carbohydrates. So here's our dog. And then I did goat because a lot of people feed goat's milk to their puppies, cow, cat, just as another carnivore comparison, and then people, just for shucks and grins on the people. So dog calories is 1400 to 1800 calories a liter compared to goat, which is 690, and cow, which is 840. So you can see that when we're thinking about supplementing, these other milks have very low caloric content relative to dog milk. Protein, 7.5 to 10 in dogs, and only 3.3 and 3.4 in our most available options. Look at our cats, pretty high. Fats, 8.3 to 11.4% fat compared again to these very low rates in herbivores. Water, relatively low amount of water, only 75 to 77% compared to these much higher, these are a more dilute milk. And lactose, interestingly enough, and this is the reason that most people say, oh, feed goat's milk to your puppies, they have the same amount of lactose, but goat's milk is missing a lot of the energy, a lot of the protein, the fat, and has more water than puppies need. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about how to supplement. The other thing we need to be really cognizant of is how much canine milk varies over time. And I'll talk about colostrum a little bit later in its own separate section, but here we have milk. So this is once milk has come in, and we have 7 to 9 days, 15 to 16, all the way up to 36 to 37. And I had information on 49, but it doesn't change that much. And so we can see very high calories at the beginning, and then it drops off to the, I'm sorry, this is actually a milliliter. No, it's 10 grams. That's the wrong measurement. So this is going to be 1550 for a liter down to 1440. Protein goes up as puppies get older. Fat goes down, except for this little boost towards the end. Water stays about the same. It's a little more dilute early on. And lactose goes up with time. And then how much do puppies take in? We don't have a whole lot of data on that, but we know at day 19, they're taking in about 17% of their body weight. That drops at day 26 to 14.6. And by days 29 and 30, they're down to between 10 and 14% of their body weight on milk intake. So they take a lot more milk in, even though they're smaller, they're taking more of their body weight in early on. And then our peak lactation in dogs is 3 to 4 weeks postpartum, just prior to when we're starting to wean them. And so we wanna think, this is going to be the greatest demand on our bitches for calcium supplementation. This is going to be the greatest demand on our bitches for fat, for calories, for protein. And we, so a lot of people focus in those first 2 weeks, but it's really week 3 and 4 where we need to put most of our effort in. Little interesting factoid about calcium. And I found this really interesting. You may not, but that the calcium levels in milk don't vary over the time the bitch is nursing. They're quite stable. But interestingly enough, the calcium in the milk is not influenced by the dam's current nutrition. And so if we don't see enough calcium in the milk, not that we would be able to do that, we would have to test it. But adding calcium to her diet isn't going to increase the calcium in the milk. It begins to drop off towards weaning, but it is the dam's body stores that get depleted as opposed to milk yield. If she's not eating enough or she hasn't had enough calcium in the past, then she produces less milk rather than produces milk with less calcium. So let's think about a couple of things. We know peak demands, week 3 to 4, we know she needs enough calcium in her diet prior to breeding, so she can store that calcium before she starts lactating. Otherwise, we're going to see a drop off in milk production. So a number of you sent in notes and said, I'm having trouble with enough milk production in my bitches. Looking at diet is probably a really good idea, and that diet needs to be before you breed them. And so you know that I recommend a reproductive diet at least 3 months out before breeding. This is why. They need their body to have gotten built up to be able to both create those puppies as well as nurse them. You know how I always say what influences sperm? Everything. Well, what influences milk production? Everything influences milk production, from her nutrition to the body condition, both too thin and too fat, don't produce quality milk. Parity, which, if you aren't familiar with that term, it's which litter is it for that bitch? Is it her first litter? That's primiparous. Is it her second, her third, her fourth? So the later litters are typically going to have more and better milk than those earlier litters. Where she is in lactation, we just talked about how milk composition changes, how often the puppies are nursing, time of day, her temperament, and how stressed she is. The more nervous and anxious a bitch is, the weaker her milk composition is going to be. The calmer, more stable she is, the better her milk production is going to be. Even really good-tempered bitches, if they are under stress, will have poor quality milk. Obviously, diseases will have an impact, particularly mammary gland diseases, and diseases like metritis, which is that uterine inflammation that can happen after whelping. Some medications can change the composition of milk. Most of our bitches aren't on medications that would affect that. And then whether or not we're using stimulants to try and get more milk in our bitches. Similarly, so this is composition, protein, calcium, fat, and then there's yield. All of the same things affect yield, except yield. So this is how much milk does the bitch produce. That has a genetic component. In cattle, that genetic component is 0.25 heritability. So if you're not familiar with heritability, that means, so the range of heritability is zero, which means genetics have absolutely no impact on a trait, to 1.0, which means it's all genetic. And most traits are somewhere arrayed from zero to one. So let's take a look at hip dysplasia, which we put a whole lot of work into trying to breed away from. Hip dysplasia, depending upon the breed, is 0.17 to maybe 0.4. So that means that 17% of the variation in hip dysplasia in a breed is the result of genetic factors in the breed. So in this case, there's no reason, we don't know exactly what it is in dogs, but if we assume it's 0.25, that means 25% of the differences between bitches in the amount of milk they produce is caused by their genetics, and the rest of it, the 75%, is environmental. And so we want to select for bitches that produce good quality milk and enough of it, but we also have all of these other things that we can pay attention to make sure that she produces enough milk. So if you have a line or a bitch that has low yield, or like Mary was talking on yesterday's call, way too much yield, remember a piece of that may be genetic, but you also want to look at all of these other things that may be contributing. And when does milk production end? So milk production ends when sucking stops. And it typically takes about 48 hours once nursing has stopped for bitches to stop producing milk and the glands to begin to shut down and everything begin to involute is what it's called. That's because sucking actually, the lack of sucking causes this growth factor to start being produced, which is really interesting. But it was kept at bay from the nursing. Once the nursing stops, it's then secreted in these really large amounts, and that starts to cause the mammary glands, that parenchyma, that tissue, to begin to shrink and stop producing. And then once it's stopped, remember it's like 40 to 50 days for total resolution of that mammary tissue, and then it goes into what's known as a quiescent or a calm or inactive state for a couple of months. And then she comes back and sees him again, and we start the process all over again. So when should you wean? You've probably heard me say it, never. Not your job. I know sometimes we have to wean puppies, but typically their mother is perfectly capable of weaning them on her own. And so I have a picture I'll show you a little bit later of a young bitch whose puppies were weaned in a day at 3 weeks of age, because the breeder thought that's what she was supposed to do. The mammary glands on this bitch have got to be so painful, because everything in her body, it's peak, it's maximum production now. So ideally you just let the process happen. You can begin to really encourage it at 8 weeks, but your puppies can nurse until the day they go home. And if you find your bitch doesn't want to nurse them at about 4 weeks when teeth come in, try and let her nurse outside the box. So you can nurse in the same room outside the box, or do it out on woods walks and things like that.